Now, I'm going to give you the definitive method. Actually, there are many, but here is the definitive method. Here is the meta strategy, the meta solution to fractionation. And it is so simple, you're going to kick yourselves when you hear it, and it's going to make total sense. It's to do with focus, internal focus versus external focus. What kind of, in most trances, I know they can be changed around, but typically speaking, where is someone's focus when they're in hypnosis? Internal or external?
Internal.
Absolutely, right, internal. Where is someone's attention normally when they're not in hypnosis, when they're normal every state, day state of awareness? Internal or external?
External.
Absolutely right, okay? This is no-brainer. This is a simple, straightforward concept. As a hypnotist, you should know this already, right? You internalize someone's attention, you will tend to create great conditions for hypnosis. You externalize someone's attention, you can still create hypnosis, but it tends to bring them back out of hypnosis. That's the general paradigm. Make sense? So, here's how you fractionate. Anything that will cause someone to focus their attention internally will tend to create trance. Anything you do to tend to create that attention to externalize will bring them back out of the trance. And by internalizing and externalizing their focus, by controlling the focus of their attention, you will be fractionating the trance. Doesn't that sound simple? In fact, what we've been talking about, both the examples from Paul and from Sean, were just giving you specific methods for doing this. Paul's example about changing tonality and energy levels, quieter tonality, quieter energy levels, tends to allow people to internalize their focus. Higher energy levels tend to stimulate attention to externalize. Same goes for pacing and leading versus asking someone a question. You're allowing their focus to internalize, you're pacing internal events, or you are asking them a question which forces them to re-engage with you on the outside, right? Do you see how that works? So, the internal fractionation method, as the name implies, is a method where you fractionate people's focus internally, which means you focus them internally, then you're allowed to come back out. Focus internally, let it back out. Focus internally, let it come back out. And it's as simple as that. And there are many different ways you can achieve this. What are some of the ways you can achieve internal focus versus external focus? Throw me some ideas.
Hey, Igor, it's Paul. So to get them to focus internally, you could revivify a memory.
Perfect, and thank you very much. This is exactly the method we're going to be focusing on today. So, there are two methods that I want to focus on. Number one is similar, actually, it's a refinement of Sean's idea, which is to do with where you move their attention. The second one is basically doing exactly what Paul suggested, which is the use reification through questions. So let's turn to the first one. The simplest one is actually semi-overt. You're going to use their awareness and you're just going to direct it to places you want it to go. You can do that through piggyback suggestions, pacing and leading if you like more the NLP sort of language. Here is the simplest way of doing it. This is semi-overt. The simplest way of doing it is to use presuppositions of awareness. Who knows what I mean by a presupposition of awareness?
Igor Paul here again. Is presupposition of awareness where you assume that the person is aware of something unconsciously, and then they will be consciously aware of it when you point it out to them?
Actually, yes, it's very, very close. And you've got the essence of what the presupposition of awareness is. Presuppositions of awareness are actually a linguistic construct where you will basically force people's attention, like you said, to go to places where they did not necessarily exist before, and you're doing it in a way that they think it was their idea. The classic example, and this goes right down the line of what you were talking about, Paul, is until I mentioned it, who was aware of their left foot? But you're pretty aware of it right now, right? Is anyone, in fact, not aware of their left foot right now? In fact, I defy anyone to not be aware of their left foot. Why? Because I'm mentioning it. And by mentioning it, it draws your attention to it. That's a presupposition of awareness. The way you control people's focus is very simply by mentioning ideas or things, and their focus will naturally go there. It's the nature of focus. To do this, you can use certain language. The language is notice, become aware of, focus, sense, hear, feel, taste. These are all words which are instructions to take your awareness from one point and put it to the point somewhere else. You have a left foot, right? Everyone's going to go, yes. Do you notice the sensation in your left foot yet? Bam! I now have your attention on your left foot. How do we use this for fractionation? Well, you have internal processes and you have external processes. Any internal process will fractionate internally. Any external process will fractionate externally. So, here's an example of an internal-external fractionation using presuppositions of awareness. I'd like you to focus on your breathing. Your breathing is in and out. Now, as you're breathing in and out, I don't know if you can look around the room and just notice where all the doors are and all the windows are. How many windows are in the room? Because you have doorways inside. Your heart has different valves, little doors inside it. And I don't know if you can feel your heart beating. If you're quiet enough, you probably can. Okay, let me just pause you there. This was using novel experiences to internalize and externalize your focus. Do you notice that mini cycle? Internal, external, internal. By the way, right now we're back on the external. Did everyone notice that cycle going through?
Yeah.
So this is slightly overt, right? Whilst people may not know why you're doing this, they know that you're doing it. So that's why I would call it a semi-overt or semi-covert technique. The first technique for internal fractionation method is the presupposition of awareness. The second is, I think, more elegant because it's totally covert and it uses Paul's idea of revivification. Paul, would you like to tell us all what you mean by revivification?
Sure. Revivification is where you get the person to not only think of a memory, but actually remember it vividly so that they can re-experience the feelings, emotions,
awesome.
You know, see colors, hear sounds as vividly as possible in order to make it real.
Great. I think that's a very great definition. Sean and Paul from London, do you guys understand the definition?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Paul. From US. Seeing as you gave such a great definition, I'd like you to pick either one of Sean or Paul as a volunteer, and because you've got to choose your volunteers, it's always good to choose your own volunteers. And I'd like you to give us a quick demonstration of a revivification in order to internalize someone's focus.
Sure. Sean, you game?
Yep.
Okay. So Sean, tell me a favorite food that you tell me the favorite kind of ice cream that you like.
My favorite ice cream would be probably caramel, something like that. Caramel ice cream.
Okay. Do you remember the first time you had caramel ice cream?
Yeah.
Now, think about, remember that time and describe for me what it tasted like.
Obviously the ice cream itself was very cold.
Okay, let me pause you guys there. Excellent job there, Paul. Sean, let me ask you this. As the subject there, did you notice an increasing tendency for your focus to go inside you as you were looking to answer Paul's questions?
Yeah, so, you know, you start looking for memories, but seeing it in front of you. I was remembering what it tasted like and the texture of it.
So he's doing a little mini regression, and it's basically creating that little hypnotic process. So that's a very elegant example of that, Paul. So how can we take that example, which is a little bit overt at the moment, and turn it into something natural? Well, what happens in conversations? Well, people talk about stuff, right? And they ask each other's questions. Now, the nature of the questions that you ask will give you a different kind of response. So, for example, to use Paul's example right there, Sean, if you're willing to keep playing with this, let's see if we can make this a little bit more covert and still interesting. So, you like ice creams, right, Sean?
Yeah.
And what kind of ice cream did you like?
Caramel.
Oh, really? See, I actually remember the first time I had caramel ice cream. I was in Italy on a beautiful piazza. This is in Rome. And it's one of these traditional kind of, you know, Italian ice cream places. You know what I mean? I don't know, what was the kind of place you used to go to as a kid to have ice cream? Is it like a favorite place you used to go to?
Yeah, we used to go to Italy.
Yeah, whereabouts?
We used to go in Rome. There's a place, I can't remember what it's called now, and we used to go down south. As you walked along the street, we'd have the ice cream parlors dotted along, and we'd stop in them.
So as you walked along the street, you could choose any ice cream parlor to go inside. What were those places like?
Quite small. You'd literally walk in off the street, and the counter would be right there. You could look in, see all the ice cream, decide what flavor you want.
And what kind of selections did you have?
Probably 50 different flavors.
And very good. And relax. Then you bring yourself back again. So you notice how essentially I've done exactly the same thing Paul did, but I've just turned it into a slightly more conversational thing. This sounds like a normal getting to know each other kind of conversation, right? Especially Paul and Paul. Do you guys agree? This sounds like a normal kind of conversation.
You know, I've noticed in the past, like, so we're listening to the course and absorbing the information, and we're kind of like in the student learning mode.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you want volunteers, it's we have to use your phrase, re-engage our neurology to get into a different state in order to participate the way that you want us to. And sometimes that's hard to do. So, like what you just did, that example, that conversational example, I've done that a million times, okay? But for me to, like, do it on the fly, like when I'm trying to, like, absorb all this information and learn, it takes effort. It's
absolutely. Paul, and let me meant to make a comment on your particular induction. In fact, one of the reasons I'm pulling you in and out of the calls, do you know why I'm doing this, one of the reasons? It's because it fractionates you. It actually is installing the very skills that we're trying to install. Otherwise, I could do these seminars in one of two very simple formats. One is entirely participation, where you're totally on the active mode, or entirely on seminar mode. But if you do that, if I did that, it would not allow you, it would rob you of the experience of moving between transitions. Make sense? The other thing that it also does is, and which is a useful thing in terms of teaching, is it allows me to make interesting contrasts. In other words, you know how to do this, and it allows me to keep adding kind of refinements or take people in a different direction. Because the fact is, I know you, Paul, I know you're a very good hypnotist, particularly conversational hypnotist. We've had many conversations about these things in the past. And now this challenge becomes being able to throw that switch in more situations. The harder I can make it for you to throw that switch, the better a conversational hypnotist you will be, because you'll be able to do it in more unusual circumstances. Does that make sense to you, Paul?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
So with people who are less familiar, for example, Sean, I know, just recently came off of hypnotherapy training, so he's a little less familiar with hypnosis. I would typically, if I get him to do a demonstration, you'll notice me doing this later on or in other sessions, I'll actually spend more time warming Sean up, because it's not fair to throw him into the deep end so much. With ideas, it is, because I'm forcing his mind to make the same jump. But when it comes to delivering, doing an actual process, he has less experience. So I will then warm him up a little bit more to engage him with it. Much like with the storytelling workshop, I warmed you guys up a little bit more because that was something that you're less familiar with. With things that I know you're more familiar with, I make no apology. One of my jobs, one of the reasons you've paid extra to be on these calls, is to make me force you to go into that. But it is to make you work your neurology to make that happen. So thank you for spotting a pattern. Anyone who is listening on these calls, this is another example of conversation hypnosis in action, I guess. And it's in a very elegant example of the exact thing that we're talking about right now, which is an internal external fractionation. We're just fractionating you between internal absorbing mode, external performance mode, so that you become easily and flexibly able to navigate between the two. Does that make sense to you, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, in terms of coming back to what we've been talking about, do you all understand now how we can use revivification in a very naturalistic sort of setting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me put a scenario to you and see how you guys might deal with it. I'm not going to ask you to actually give a demonstration. So this is just purely you can theorize about how you might set this up. You're negotiating something with someone. Maybe you want to buy a house, buy a car. Maybe it's a business negotiation. Doesn't matter. You're negotiating something. Negotiations are going well. Suddenly, you hit a wall. Your landlord wants more rent or is refusing to budge on a certain issue, whatever it is. You're hitting a wall, and this is not a reasonable wall. You try to get around it, and you can almost see their filters coming down. You see them running through the loop over and over again. Maybe their anxiety levels are going up, or they're looping through the same irrational response. It just doesn't make sense. It's not reasonable for them to be having this objection, and you can't get around it. What do you do? Given everything we've talked about so far, how might you covertly, in other words, totally in the moment, use everything we've talked about so far in order to break the loop, break that stuck objection, and help them reach that field of that trance of infinite possibilities where your suggestion, which is possibly a better suggestion than the one they're making, is one that they can at the very least consider fully and maybe adopt or adapt to make it fit their situation. So in fact, I'm going to pick on someone to just try and work through how they might do this. And it doesn't have to be the definitive solution. The one solution I have is an example of something. And I want you guys to start thinking about your own examples and maybe see where you can blend things in. So let me pick on someone we haven't spoken to in a while, Paul from London. Would you care to hazard an opinion on how you might use everything we've talked about so far, ABS, conversational trances, covert hypnosis, revivification, in order to achieve that?
What springs to mind is I'm thinking in the context of what you're describing, a negotiation. Perhaps off the top of my head might suggest, for want of a better word, there have been similar situations, similar negotiation difficulties before where you've hit such a bottleneck. Mm-hmm. And see if we can remember how to find a way out of it.
So how might you do that? With like revivification questions or by just telling a story or what?
Yes. Revivification, definitely, yeah.
So be asking them questions about other negotiations where they solve the same sort of
problem. Yeah, yes, possibly.
Okay.
I'm not sure how that would lead to the outcome necessarily. No,
that's actually a very good start.
I mean, just in difficult negotiations generally, if I remember rightly, useful techniques are to focus on the common ground, break down the problem into smaller parts, so you're honing on the problem.
Excellent.
And possibly breaking down the problem, asking them to focus on the problem, the specific nature of the problem would draw them inward.
Which would create a little fixation of attention as well.
Is that an outcome?
Good. Yeah. Okay, so we have something general forming there. The problem creates the attention. You are focusing the attention there, so you're creating the trance sets. By using questions, you might focus them on solutions to similar problems in the past, so see if we can get around it that way. So that might be a very nice conversation way of doing it. Good, I like that. Put yourself back on mute. Let's pick on Sean. Sean, are you live?
Hello.
Excellent. So let me just set the scene out so that you can put your mind into it. You're there at a negotiation table, maybe in a business negotiation or something like that. You've been doing great work, using all your little language patterns, and as you wonder about this and you can wonder about that, and the more we do this, the more we do that, and I believe we can start doing these things. Imagine for a moment taking it there, you're doing all these wonderful things. Now, you hit a wall, and the wall just loops around. You keep saying, no, I can't do this. No, I can't do this. No, I can't do this. And you ask, like, why can't we do this? Why can't I paint my house a different color? No, I just can't paint the house. You know, what is it about the house being the color that you want? I just can't paint the house. So you can obviously hear that he's stuck in some way, right? So what things starts bringing to mind spontaneously that you might start trying in terms of what we covered today, maybe in other things, in ways you can naturalistically bring in the patterns we've been talking about?
I would try saying something like, well, can you imagine, so try and get them to go inside, say something like, well, can you imagine us leaving here today? So like presupposing that we're gonna leave here, leaving here today with, after overcoming this disagreement, so trying to pace and lead the state that we're, you know, stage we're at, and then just trying to lead him out.
So you'd be
into a solution.
So you'd be basically a solution focused approach, and the fractionation element would be in, you know, pace the problem a little bit more solution, right? And which is it could work quite well. And at what point, how would you fractionate the trances? Because remember, we've got three different states that are going to be falling in either randomly or according to your wishes, depending on how you structure this. The three states are problem state, I guess you don't want him in there too much, solution state, trance of infinite possibilities, and normal everyday state when they don't have a problem and everything's fine. So how are you going to cycle them, and then what kind of mix of those states do you want to have as you use these processes in order to get them to a solution?
I think I would start talking more about the problem that we have, and with less solution leading, and then try and switch it so more solution, less problem near the end. So I'd be saying things like, obviously we particularly up at the moment, but and then go into the solution one.
Okay. So you're using
using that as a unconscious dissociation or something like that.
Excellent. This is a good start. And by the way, when you talk about conscious unconscious dissociation, keep that in back of your mind, because on the next session, on session two, we're going to come up with a very, very powerful pattern that you'll be able to use instantly to do that. It's actually very, very elegant and very, very sneaky. I love it. It's called the agreement reversal sets. So this is a useful way of doing it. The only danger I would point out in what you're doing is, but you don't want to overfocus on the problem, because you just basically can help entrench the problem. And sometimes, depending on the nature of the problem, making a leap between problem and solution, they can't make that leap. It's too much of a step. So you might need to do like a chain. Usually have some of a maybe a break state or a chain that leads them up to being able to even contemplate the solution. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's actually another elegant way of doing this. Paul, let's throw you into the middle. Paul from the US, let's throw you into amongst the wolves and see if you have an alternative solution.
Sure. I think that in the sales process, you know, you want to gather information. So I would ask him something along the lines of, help me to understand, you know, what are the obstacles that are keeping you from reaching the terms that, you know, you previously thought were reasonable. That will then force him to go inside and then list all the details.
And how would you bring him back outside?
And then to bring him back outside, you could then say something, you know, really basic like, and so here we are today, sitting at this table, you know, there you are, here I am, and, you know, we're now wrestling with what shall we do so that we can then, you know, really enjoy the benefits of the deal, you know, let's say a year down the road, you know, where we're working hand in hand to accomplish whatever.
Excellent.
So that then future paces him into the solution.
Excellent. So you've actually created a very elegant, slightly refined combination of Paul from London and Sean's ideas of revivifying by focusing down on the problem and the steps and finding agreement within them and kind of pacing it into a future, you know, outcome and kind of looping through those steps as you do that. It's a very elegant way of doing that. Very good.
So then I would do a Mike and John technique where you tell a story from you know, your past experience where you were facing a similar situation, and the solution that you want him to adopt was adopted in that situation, and everyone walked away happy as clams.
Excellent. I particularly like that end piece because it's a very elegant way of being indirect. Remember, particularly when there are walls up, the more indirect you can get, the more you can basically walk around the wall without having to walk through it. The future pacing, or, you know, painting vivid pictures in people's minds, is a great sales technique. It's a great way of persuading people. But the minute you have a wall, a kind of problem in the way, people tend to see that, and it'll bounce that future memory, if you like, can bounce off those walls, because people go, I actually know, I'm trying to reject this reality in the first place. So adding a nice little indirect touch to the stories, the My Friend John technique, is a very elegant piece, and I like that a lot. Well done, Paul. I like that. So let me just take another step to the side from everything you've been doing so far and see if we can come up with something which I'm not going to say necessarily any better, because I think every idea you've had so far works tremendously well, but maybe something that you wouldn't have considered doing in the past. So you have a wider way, a set of techniques or repertoire for doing this. The particular example I have here, and this is just to get you thinking in different ways. Remember, this is what I'm going to try to get you guys to do. I want you to adopt these ideas, not as techniques that you follow to the letter, but as ideas that you use to get your own imaginations fired up to create better solutions. If in a year's time you can come back to me and give me ideas or methods or ways you've used this stuff that I've never even thought about, I'll be delighted. I'll jump in the air and clap my hands and thank you for having evolved and truly understood what's going on here. So here's another example to hopefully get your minds thinking in different directions. The principle behind this is indirection, which is to say, if you take a problem head on, even if you're using, you know, nice little fluid language patterns and ideas to go around it, people can very often still get stuck in the thought loop. So sometimes you need to just totally go left of field and just totally surprise them by coming from a direction they never even thought of. So by the time they realize what's happened, it's too late, it's already happened. This is my preference. So here's a way you might do this. I'm in a negotiation table, maybe there's a whole team negotiating, and we are starting to butt heads, we're getting a loggerhead, I'm getting one of these stuck reactions. So I might cycle through a few of these things, I might even try and persuade him more directly, and obviously I'm getting stuck. I realize something else needs to happen. So the first thing I'll do is I say, let's take a break. It's natural in longer negotiations, people take a break and do whatever, right? Let's just take a break and just clear our heads a little bit. Everyone takes a break. It's a break state. We are now, after having activated the problem, we still let the afterglow be there a little bit, but we're letting it subside a bit so it doesn't interfere so much with the problems, with the solutions we're about to start presenting. Now, the next thing I want, I am working strategically towards a internal fractionation technique using questions, revivification questions, as we discussed already, because they're the most covert. So the way I'll set it up is through self-disclosure. So step one is negotiation at a wall. Step two, let's just take a break. Step three, during the break, you know, people casually will chat about things anyway. Introduce into the conversation through the principle of self-disclosure certain hypnotic themes, hobbies, vacations I've been to, family stories, stuff like that. And I might start in exactly the same way as you saw me start with Sean earlier on, by telling a story. Hey, I love ice cream. I remember when I was in Italy this time, we did that and had these most wonderful flavors. And this one, I think it was called pistachio or whatever it was. So I'm giving basically self-disclosure in a category that I wish to activate. The typical categories, by the way, which are inoffensive and can work very well, are hobbies, vacations, families. Those are the three golden categories for revivifying trances and actually resources in many ways. Then, once I've told a few stories, if they haven't spontaneously told any of their own, I will just basically lead into a question saying, I'm sure you've had similar vacations. What kind of places did you like to go into? Or something like that. Notice it's a very elegant segue. It's not just like, where do you go on holiday? Okay, do you enjoy ice creams? Okay, tell me about ice creams. See how that kind of FBI interview thing can basically go all right? You need to set a context, which is conversational after all, to not set any warning flags going. So I've told my self-disclosure story. I ask a question to Revify, and my questions are always going to be interesting questions because they force information to come forward. Here's an example of what I mean by this. You can ask the child those questions like, you know, what was the place like you grew up in? That will get a revivification. It will get them thinking about things, right? What kind of place did you grow up in? Here's a question, a way of putting a spin on the question, which will force a deeper level of search. In other words, a deeper internalization, which means a better trance. What did the street look like on which you played? Or what was the street like? Or what were the kids like that you played with when you were growing up? Or how large was the street on which you played when you were growing up? Notice the difference between asking what was a place like you grew up in and asking something specific like what was a street like that you grew up in? How large was the street? I'm asking for specific information. In order to answer how large it is or how many people I grew up with or how green it was or how much nature there was or how many cars there were, whatever it is, in order to answer these specific questions, they have to bring the whole experience to life more fully in order to zero in on the particular bit of information I've asked for. Does that make sense to everyone? Do you see how that works?
Yeah.
It also happens to be a more interesting way of asking questions. So it avoids the FBI, you know, I'm sure you've had this at party. People say, what do you do? Where are you from? How do you do that? And you get kind of like, stop interviewing me. It makes it a little bit more interesting as well. Now, very important. And Paul mentioned this a few times in things he was saying. This is very, very important. When you ask these questions, you switch tonalities. Remember from the personal power session. When you take something seriously, like it's important, they'll take it seriously. If I casually ask, so, you know, what was the street like you grew up in? I'll get a casual answer. If I go, so what was the place like you grew up in? I mean, really, what was it like, the street that you grew up in? I usually like that word really to throw it in as well because it makes them sound like this. I'm implying I don't want a surface level answer. I want a deeper level answer. I really like that word really because of that reason. So now I'm revivifying his experience in just the same way as we demonstrated. Now, at some point, I'll break the state by just doing normal chit-chat again and we'll go back into something else. Typically, during the normal chit-chat, by the way, they will spontaneously access a revivification memory, in which case just sort of surf that wave, take it in, and then bring it back out. Now, you're going to go through, when you're deepening the revivification questions, you basically got to think in your mind, feedback loop, feedback loop, feedback loop. That's the question you have inside your mind, or the idea you have inside your mind. What I mean by feedback loop, you're changing your tone, becoming more serious, so they take it more seriously. You're throwing in hints, like the word not really, what was it really like, to imply that you want a deeper level answer, and you get deeply absorbed in their questions, in the question they're asking, deeply absorbed in their process, so it shows them that they should be getting deeply absorbed as well. The other thing you can start doing is use the feedback frame, or the trackback frame. Those of you familiar with my conversational hypnosis home study course will know that what I mean by this is you start feeding the actual words that they're using back into them. Again, go back and listen to the little example I gave you with Sean. Sean was talking about the street he was going down and how they had, you know, ice cream shops everywhere. I said, oh wow, that's wonderful. So you could walk down the street and you had ice cream shops everywhere. You could just choose any one of them. Now it sounds like I'm just enthusiasm about his story, but I'm actually feeding back his exact same words, the same description, which reinforces it in his mind, which basically deepens that little mini trance for him that little bit. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
So now what we do is we cycle through that process. We cycle through breaking, normal chit-chat, refining questions, going deeper into the questions, drilling into it, and then loosening them, lightening the mood again with normal chit-chat. Depending on the situation, you may want to bring it to a really normal, light chit-chatty mood, or you may just bring it to a semi-trance mood and bring deeper trance, semi-trance, deeper trance. It just depends on the context. Now, once you've done this a few times, you have two things. Number one, you have trance. Number two, you have resources. Now it's time to apply the resources and the trance to the problem. This is the bit where which I call the integration. By accessing all these different interesting states and all these potential solutions, you have the trance of infinite possibilities. When they are don't have a care in the world. They're in the place of infinite possibilities. And if you want that specifically, you can ask about those times. You can revivify, you know, school holidays and when it's like what it's like to leave school for summer holidays and have this total sense of freedom and you can do anything. You can talk about, you know, those of you who've been to Woodstock, you can talk about Woodstock and how it was such a liberating experience. If you know that they've had similar experiences, you can bring those to life. You want anything that draws possibilities into the frame. Now you integrate. How do you integrate? You smoothly transition from your deepest trance that you've just done, maintaining your trance voice too, and you begin to talk about the problem, but you remain in that voice tonality of the infinite possibilities. So you just access, let's say you just access the most amazing summer holiday, which was total fun, and they're having fun on the slides, and you know, the family is just jumping around the place, and he has this creative idea of going on a picnic. Normally they would never just do anything spontaneous, but they decide to just pack their bags and go. And then you use the same tonality and say, look, I know we're having, you know, I want to consider the painting the walls again. There's many different things that we can do with this house. And just by changing the colors a little bit, notice how now I'm using the trance voice to cycle back into the problem. I'm not giving them a solution. I'm just getting them to focus about the idea. Think about the colors the house could have. Now, I know that house can be many different colors. Blue might not be the one. And as you think about it, you know that the old shabby colors it is in now isn't the only way that it could learn. And there are many different ways to do this. It doesn't have to be an expense. It doesn't have to be. And you start throwing in even more possibilities to widen the set of infinite possibilities. Actually, by infinite, it wouldn't be, you didn't wouldn't need to have widening, but basically, assuming they have a finite set of more possibilities, you just widen the possibilities until you reach towards infinity. Does this make sense so far? This stage is crucial, the integration stage. You maintain the mannerisms and tonalities of the trance, and you begin to filter in more and more possibilities whilst focusing their attention on the problem without asking for a resolution yet. Because what you're doing is you're sending the mind on a search for resources, for other possibilities. All you're doing is you're opening doors around the fences they've built up, and you're just firing and saying, hey, here's a way to look at it. Here's another way to look at it. Here's another possibility. To stimulate them to be willing to say, okay, I'll look in this direction. That has a something I could maybe consider. And stimulate them to think about possible solution in that area. And then you expand that area until it has a mutually convenient solution. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Very good. Now, when you have all these possibilities, you need to collapse down on one of them. This is where the negotiations continue. When you find a solution that is mutually convenient, this is part of the whole trance work, you then continue the negotiations on other points as though nothing happened, as is totally normal. You kind of assume that everything is normal, you go back to normal chit-chatty voice and you speak in normal, conscious, everyday sort of ways. That sense of possibility will now be expanded. Now, there's two ways to do this. You can either drill them down onto an agreement or something, which is the next small step. We'll talk about that more in the third session. Or you can just use the trance process to basically open them up to possibilities, then so that their mind now has expanded, but you do not ask for them to commit on any possibility yet. And this is very important, because if you start saying, hey, think about this suggestion, or about this suggestion, or maybe do this way, you may prematurely force them to go back to, no, I can't, I've got to do it this way. If you just keep them open in that sense of anything's possible, but don't make your mind up yet, and then you distract them yet again by going into a different negotiation point on a normal conscious level, what will happen is the bit of work you just did will kind of expand, making other things possible. So that when you later come back, maybe a day later, maybe a couple of hours later, when you later come back to painting the walls a different color, or whatever the point at issue was, when you later come back, it's something where they suddenly go, well, actually, yes, maybe I can consider different things. And they'll start giving you suggestions for possibilities that they've now been considering unconsciously, and that will give you the directions in which a mutual solution will lie. Now you no longer have to fight. You can find a mutual solution. you've opened their minds to it, and you've cycled through it in a very conversational setting. They will never know any hypnosis elements ever happened. Does this make sense to everyone?
Yeah.
Do you have any questions about that process? Because this is kind of the coming to the tail end of today's session. And if there's any questions about how you apply the internal fractionation method in a very covert, natural setting, if you can't imagine yourself doing that right now, then it's time to ask a question. If you can imagine yourself just going, sure, I can see myself doing this, I can just run through the process, then we can continue. So do you have any questions or any comments about that at all?
It's Paul in London here. I guess be interested if you could perhaps expand a bit on, you know, where you're moving from your serious tone, talking about hobbies, vacations, and so forth, the transition into the possibilities concerning a negotiation solution. I suppose my question is, any specific examples of how you might transition elegantly and smoothly into introducing such possibilities?
Yes, thank you. That's a very good question. And we'll cover more and more of these in later sessions as well. But here's a demonstration of something you might want to do. You just talked about a holiday and you go, wow, that sounds like a really amazing holiday. Now, you know, the thing about you know, having spontaneous ideas is that you can kind of come up with kind of all kinds of solutions. Because I've been thinking about, for example, the house and how those walls aren't just the right thing. Now, I know there's a million different ways that things can be done, and I'm not saying that my way is the only way, because you're a smart enough person to think that, you know, to understand that there's so many different ways to make this house look fantastic. And it could be a color you really like. It might be just changing the expense formula so it doesn't cost us anything. It might be all kinds of things that I haven't even considered yet, but all I know is that you, as a smart individual, can think of all kinds of different things for improving the quality of life. And you might even tell a story. See, it's a bit like the time I was at university, and then you go off and tell a story in the same tonality, which is all about change, is all about assuming more possibilities, etc. So what you've done there is, you're basically feeding more and more and more possibilities in, always coming back to the trigger. The trigger is talking about the walls in this case, because they didn't want us to paint the walls. And you're doing it in a friendly setting. You're not saying, look, I know we don't want to change anything. You know the walls aren't going to change. You don't have to paint them. But wouldn't it be interesting if we found different, you know, some ways of enjoying this or making that happen? Does that give you some ideas of ways of doing it, of directions of going with this?
Yes. I might be missing the point entirely here. You mean you say you transition into, you know, exploring the possible. You mean be explicit about the negotiation issue or possibly use metaphor?
Yes, is the answer. Which is to say, you don't want to be too explicit about the... Well, it depends on where they're at. If you sense that they're ready to crack, you become very explicit. You say, hey, let's just talk about these walls again. And they go, well, actually, yeah, maybe there is something we can do about this. You're going to need to judge this depending on where they're at and how strong the resistance was before. If it was mild resistance, but it was still looping, and you've come back to it, you might just say, hey, let's just talk about these walls, and just, you know, there's many ways we can handle these walls. And blue may not be your favorite color, so why don't you tell me how you, the kind of things that the wall, you know, that we could do with these walls that would be okay with you? Because whilst changing the color is one way, but there's all kinds of different things. You could change the wallpaper, we could bring in professional decorators so it looks good, or I could do it myself so it doesn't cost us a penny. I don't even know why you didn't want that wall being painted blue. And now what starts happening, you start exploring possibilities as you start exploring also the resistance behind the reasons behind the resistance. Make sense? That's if you think they're ready to crack.
Yep.
If they're not ready to crack yet, you need to be more indirect, because otherwise you're prematurely coming back to the problem, and the problem will just basically overload the potential solution. The potential solution may be too fragile. So all you want to do now is, it's like you're in a stuffy room, all you want to do is open the windows to let some fresh air in, and then you'll start with the actual negotiation. So the way you would do that is to say, hey, you know, that's like brilliant, you know, well, holiday, the beach sounded so awesome and amazing. You know, this is how I feel like when I sit at home and I look at the walls and think about all the ways this house could be a tremendous house, and all the different things I could do with this place, and it's just a wonderful thing. I want you to know how much I love this place. And I know that you love this house as much because you put so much effort into making this little piece look right. And I was always amazed at the different ways you found solutions for, you know, the bathroom. And despite the lack of space, you made it seem so spacious. And I wonder what other ways there could be to make this house look even better. Now, you know, you're a smart person. You've done this for a long, long time. And you know many different tricks of the picture. I wouldn't even guess that. Now, I don't even need to think about the house right now. I'm sure you'll carry on and you'll come up with a really good solution all by yourself. Let's talk about a little bit about the fridge in the kitchen. Because you know you were talking about getting a new fridge put in as well. And it's probably time that we start doing that now. So what I've done now is I've opened the doorway, I've let fresh air in, I've started an unconscious process to search for alternatives, and now I've gone back to my normal conscious voice, and I've gone, let's talk about the fridge. I've changed topics, so I'm allowing the seed I've planted to carry on in the background whilst we talk about a different thing in the foreground. Then, when I judge opportune, I might come back to the walls and keep coming back until I sense that the resistance is crumbling, and eventually we can just talk about it in a normal negotiation frame, and I'll have lots of solutions. Typically what will happen, by the way, is spontaneously, halfway about talking to the fridge, I'll go, you know what we could do about the walls? What we could do is I could get my cousin to come in and paint it, that way I wouldn't have to pay a fortune and it'll be fine. And you'll go, where'd that come from? Well, of course it came from the unconscious, from the seed that you planted in advance. Does that make sense to you, Paul?
Yes, it does. I think the penny drops.
Excellent.
Very, very useful.
It's a very, very powerful pattern. It's very, very indirect. It's totally covert. No one will catch you doing this when you do it properly. And it's incredibly powerful and useful. Here's something very important I want to emphasize. Do not do this unless you can bring a win-win to the table. Do this only if you can do this with your personal ethics in place. And here's why. Apart from the fact that you are an evil person if you just try and manipulate people without a best interest at heart, something the kind of person I wouldn't want to hang out with anyway. That aside, there are very selfish reasons why I should do this. Go back to our example at the beginning of this session of the double glazement salesman in the UK. Briefly, you may be able to pull one over on someone. The moment they catch you, you are out. Nothing you say will ever be taken seriously again. In fact, you will probably destroy the entire negotiation process if you try and pull a fast one on them and they catch you. And chances are that if the solution you have for them is worse than the current status quo, in other words, you're taking advantage of them, it's in your benefit and not in theirs, that they will know unconsciously at some point the penny will drop and the relationship will be destroyed. You will have nothing ever to do with them again. And chances are you may even have things like a lawsuit or other problems coming forward. So there is no point trying to pull a fast one. There's absolutely zero point, especially given that when you activate a trance of infinite possibilities, you can find a perfectly adequate solution that has both of your best interests at heart. So you must always go into this with your best interest at heart, and their best interest at heart. And if a solution they come up with, you sense that maybe they're just, you know, bending a little bit too much, be generous and say, no, that's not good enough for you. Let's find something even better that'll work for both of us. That way, you're gonna find relationships become totally surefire, and you'll find it even easier to get your way in future times because they'll know that your way is the right way for them as well. So get your ethics in place. This is the most important thing I can emphasize here. So coming to the end of the session today then, the penny has hopefully dropped. We can use all kinds of powerful processes. The one we focused on today was the ABS formula. A is to absorb them in trance. How do we do this? Well, the problem, the very thing that will activate our need for covert trances will create the covert trances. B, we want to bypass the conscious mind, the critical factor, the cement that's been sticking them to their stuck way of thinking. The way of choice we've talked about today is the internal fractionation method. S, we want to stimulate the unconscious mind to find solutions. We want to stimulate it to get to enter the trance of infinite possibilities. How have we done this? Again, the internal fractionation method is being used for the exact same purpose. Whilst you're getting them to think about pleasant holidays, about pleasant experiences, about hobbies that they do, their family, you can take these as resources, which will be piped later into the negotiation or solving the problem in the first place. Finally, you integrate it. That's when you take all the resources from the ramifications and you pop them into a trance of infinite possibilities, and you let the unconscious mind do the rest. Then you move on like nothing happened, like everything is normal, and let the unconscious mind spontaneously come up with solutions. If you do this, you will have powerful covert trances every time. So traditionally, as we're coming to the end of the session, the traditional question I ask is, any comments or questions that you have on what you've learned so far?
Igor, it's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Actually, there's a lot of subject matter in this session, but I think it's been laid out very beautifully. And if you have all the key building blocks in place already, it shouldn't be that difficult to assimilate it very naturally and usefully.
Thank you, Paul. I totally agree with that, and thanks for putting that out. It's great to be recognized that I've taken actually a very difficult subject and hopefully made it straightforward and easy. And I'd like you guys to really take time to think about what I've talked about, maybe even try a few of the covert trances in action. The reason I say this is when we come onto session two, we're going to go down the rabbit hole. We're going to take you from the beginnings we've started now, which is reasonably linear. It's a reasonably step-by-step process. And I'm going to take you totally down the rabbit hole where I'm literally going to show you how to experience the trance of infinite possibilities in order to help someone else experience it for them as well. We're going to do that with language, and we're going to do that with the agreement reversal set, which is a phenomenal tool. So get used to these ideas so we can take you even further on the next session. With that happy thought, I'd like to thank all of you again for being on the session and for taking the risks to make your neurology jump between different states, between absorbing and delivering. Trust me in that this is a great way to learn. This is the advantage of the live masterclass versus just listening to recordings afterwards. And I'm going to keep doing it, and I want to encourage you guys to keep doing that as well. Keep putting yourself on the line, knowing that every time that you do, every time you experience that mild sense of panic or risk or sense of, I don't want to do this, that is the doorway in which you get to enter your own trance of infinite possibilities. And when you enter that doorway and you begin to realize all the things that are open to you, it's like being a child all over again and knowing you have no limitations. You can do whatever you want, and you can find all kinds of crazy and novel solutions, and you will begin to discover things inside yourself, abilities you never even knew you had. It's just like discovering riding a bike is easy. When you first tried to ride a bike, you kept falling over. You might even have had fear and nerves. And then one day, you got up on that bike and you realized that the faster you rode, the easier it was to stay upright. And somewhere along the lines, you didn't have to make any effort anymore. It just became a natural thing that you just did. And that's where we're going to head with covert trances. Just a natural thing that you do in every day. So with that happy thought, thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you again on the next session 2.